Amy.
I'm Wendell.
And I'm Patrick.
And
this is
Yes
But Why
Podcast.
He came up one time, I think he had like a dog shampoo thing. And I was like, what? What is that? Like, why? Oh, it was a dog toothbrush. And I feel like he went downstairs and he got it. And when he came up, he showed it to me. He wasn't brushing his teeth at the time, but I can't imagine him not having brushed his teeth with it. So now I have like that, like, I can't imagine him having picked up it's like this crazy triangular, like, toothbrush thing. Mm-hmm. Like, for him to not have just been like, ooh, this is a toothbrush. What does it feel like?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, you know, dogs are dealing with dog stuff. Other than the poop part, I feel like, you know, dogs are like cleaner than humans.
Yeah. Dogs at least don't want to poop in their bed.
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I have two cats and they're like, you never know. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no like, well, that makes sense. Or, surely this is what he's trying to tell me by peeing on the floor. It's just like, hey, by the way, I saw there was this container and I thought, you know what? I'm going to pee in it. You're like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. Super funny. So how old is Jace now?
He is five.
Five. Wow. Yep. So the last time I saw you was New Year's, right? When you came here?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And that was many years ago, wasn't it? That was like, must have been at least six, because you didn't have a baby.
Yeah. Did we even live, like, did we still live in New York?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you guys took a trip here.
That must be at least 9 years ago.
Oh, I don't know if you lived in New York versus New Jersey versus wherever you live right now. Do you live in New Jersey or do you live in Pennsylvania?
I live in Pennsylvania.
Ah. Yeah, I believe you guys lived in New Jersey because, like, right after you got married, you moved into your New Jersey place, right? Didn't you?
No. We moved into New York. We moved in. Chris moved from New Jersey to New York.
Oh.
I've only ever lived in New York and here.
Oh. Oh, so you never had an interim New Jersey home?
Nope.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-mm. Chris had his own place.
Right.
Before he moved in with me.
Right. Huh.
Yeah.
So now you live in Pennsylvania. Where in Pennsylvania?
Bethlehem.
Oh, yes. Which is why you know the Steel Stacks and the Man Dude Bro guys.
That's right. Who are all very lovely.
I think it's so hilarious. What a, like, funny connection.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I got connected to them through one of my husband's coworkers. Like, my husband goes and does conventions everywhere. And this guy that he works with, Jer, knew about Man Dude Bro. He'd seen their shows. And so when he met me and I told him what I was doing, he was like, oh, you should meet these guys. They do a great show. And I'm the kind of person who goes, okay, and then goes on the internet and finds them and contacts them.
Yeah.
Other people just go, oh, cool, and then never hear about them again. But I was like, all right, you're right, I should contact them, and I will. Yeah, they were nice. I talked to 2 out of 4 of them about, you know, improv and stuff down there. So I find it interesting. I think a lot of us who had our, like, 20s in the art stars have found our way to improv, which is an interesting like pathway between like Irene, who's like killing it up in New York doing all sorts of stuff at her theater, and then I hear you're doing it in Pittsburgh. So Pittsburgh,
oh,
right?
Philly,
right?
Yeah,
right. Sorry, there's two major improv hubs up in the old Pennsylvania area, and I know a bunch of people from both, so
yep.
I like that state has 2 major cities doing it, right? Because, like, yeah. Dallas, like, in Texas, Austin has 5 theaters, whereas Dallas has 1 and Houston has 1. So it's, like, not really quite as booming in the other cities. But, like, yeah, yeah. Pittsburgh versus Philly, like, what's the scene in Philly? How many theaters are there? Are they all improv? Are they, like, different kinds of stuff? What's the crowd like?
Philly is different than, Philly is different than Bethlehem, because that's the steel stacks and the thing, but,
Totally. That's a whole nother subset of the, yeah. Now is Bethlehem considered a subset of Philly or a subset of Pittsburgh or a subset of New York?
Neither.
None? Okay. Because I know that all of those guys went to UCB, so it was like, okay, there's not exactly, other than what they do, there's not exactly a school where they could have gone. They went to UCB, learned it, and then brought it to the area.
Yeah. Philly is, New York from here is like 2 hours, but Philly from here is like an hour and a half, a little bit less. So it's not as bad. And then Pittsburgh is like 5 hours away.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania's
a big state.
Yeah, it's weird. But yeah, like, we're like, in Philly, okay, getting back to your question, in Philly, I get the sense that there's more stand-up places and the improv places are like only a few. Or there's comedy places that have improv in it, but it's not the major part of it. And where I'm involved is Philly Improv Theater, which is obviously a improv theater. And I feel like it's growing there. And I mean, it's weird because you know the feeling of like, I still don't know that I fully grasp the stand-up only places, because when we performed in New York, it was everything. It was I never went to the open mics that had categories as a thing. It was just whatever you did was it.
Yeah, you know, the famous people, the people that are going to be creating the narrative of what is happening, what happened in the comedy scene in the early 2000s, call the rooms that we hung out in the alt rooms.
Oh.
Yeah. They refer to that kind of stuff as alt. That's that and the, like, the there were a few stand-up rooms in the area, and that's what a lot of them will refer to them as. Because, like, I listened to one of the reasons why I wanted to do a podcast about, like, people who do improv and sketch and stand-up, like, all across the country, is that, like, you know, all the famous people, they talk about it and they have their story, but their story is very, like, you know, if 6 of them were all famous together and now, or we're all coming up together and now they're all famous, their story is just what they consider the story. And I really don't think that's the case. I think there's, like, hundreds of thousands of amazing tiny little stories of people creating theaters all over the place. And, like, I think each and every story should be told. Like, I think it's just important for each group to be able to have their story out there. And then sometimes they're born of different things. Like, you know, different, like, right now, and I won't go into much detail because I'm trying not to say too much about it on the podcast, but right now, the theater that I pretty much came up in Austin is defunct, like, had a huge issue, and now a new theater is trying to be born from the ashes of it, and it's like, okay, but it's wild how each new place has their own story and what happened, and you know, how each city supports it, you know? So Philly Improv Theater, clearly there was enough of a, like, pull in the area to be like, we need a whole theater dedicated to improv. Are there tons and tons of people there? Is it packed? Is it, like, there's wait lists to get into classes? Or is it, like, there is a solid 100 or so, or however many, and, like, those are pretty much the improvisers of the city.
It's like, it's not as big that classes will sell out within minutes, but they will, a lot of them will sell out. But there are enough classes. It's not a huge place. It's a pretty small place, but it has a lot of people within it.
Yeah.
And they sell out a lot, and as far as, like, shows, and they have big people come and everything, and but it doesn't, I feel like they existed before they had the building, and then I think it's like, or like they were like sort of coming together, you know, before that, and the building, they've had that, I think, for 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, like, just starting to become big, like, because it's involving a lot of, like, it's connecting quickly with other people. Like, I don't know whether that's, like, Greg, the owner, like, his, like, how connected he is with other groups or whatever, but, like, it is still, like, it's recognized a lot, like, you know, like, the kind of improv places you could take a class, but it won't count somewhere else kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, this is one of the places where it would at least be considered as counting or something, you know? Like, but, I mean, they just started, like, a diversity program a couple years ago, and that's how I started there, is I was able to go because I got a diversity scholarship, so I got to take classes for free. So, yeah.
How do you feel about that? We've talked about that a lot, and we always feel weird about it.
It's a growing... They just hired a new diversity coordinator. The last one, it wasn't anything bad. He just moved to L.A., I think.
And, sure. That's where they go.
So I think he's trying to, like, steer it, and he's got a vision for it, and, it's a thing it's just something that is too complicated to have a firm opinion on, because it's different in so many places.
Yeah, right on, I hear you. Yeah. We Austin is a very white place, right? And and so, like, even though there's 5 improv theaters, like, most of them are 90% white guys, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And so it's hard, and everyone's trying to figure out how to appeal to more, because there's people in the city, you know, of different races and different, you know, all sorts of different, but it's like, hey, would you like to do some improv? And it's just not that exciting. Yeah. So we're trying to figure that out. How did you hear about it to start the classes? Like, were you interested in improv and then you just happened to see the scholarship and that helped get you in the door? Or were you somebody like, hey, there's a scholarship for an acting class, and then you realized it was improv? Like, was it chicken or the egg? Like, was it improv you were looking for, or were you just looking to get involved and improv happened to be the thing?
I definitely was looking to get into improv. I actually had joined a group here. When after I moved here, like, I didn't find anything for a few years. Like, I made friends and stuff in, like, neighboring towns where I worked at cafes and all that stuff. But, like, it was a good music scene and stuff, but it was hard to find, like, a comedy that wasn't, like it was, I don't know, like a sort of all-encompassing comedy kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, it wasn't till, like, 3 years into living there that I found out about this improv place, or this improv troupe that was auditioning, a short form improv troupe. And I auditioned for it, and I got in, even though I had literally never done improv. All I had done is everything I'd done in New York, which was just nonsense.
Sure, but a good beginning.
So I joined that, and I was with them for, like, 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But that ended due to reasons.
Okay. the short form troupe that you were part of, did you do a weekly show or something, or did you like travel around? Like, cause they had auditions, so clearly there was something they were auditioning for.
Yeah, they did, every other week at Steel Stack. They had like a steady show, and then also, did a lot of private gigs. There were a lot of private gigs, like places like, retirement center, like a bunch of different kinds of things. Like it's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I've taught corporate workshops at like, you know, startups and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as doing like a big event show, mm-hmm. I think short form is probably better suited to it because, I've tried to do like longer form improv in a larger setting, and it's just very mm-hmm. difficult because you really have to get everybody in on the same vibe. And with 100 or 300 people, it's like, no, the people in the back are talking to each other. Like, especially if there's food and or alcohol and or tables, you're like, oh yeah, nobody's paying attention to me in any way. The only success I've had with those large groups was like a dinner theater show that I used to do.
Yeah.
Because it was like murder mm-hmm. mystery, so they had to pay attention. Or even if they didn't, like, they didn't ruin it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's we definitely at some point did a thing at a dinner theater place.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Yeah, I guess your short form would work better in that sort of situation.
I mean, I don't think I was very good at it. I was not. There were a lot of things I learned through that. And I was like, oh, because when you just perform by yourself, you know, you don't have to make eye contact with anyone.
Right. I think it's you that you like went straight into performing with them without taking any training of any kind.
I didn't know that I would. And I was just like, oh, I had also never auditioned for anything. So there's that also. It was very strange. I think maybe they just didn't, like, maybe a lot of the same people always auditioned or something.
Probably.
And I didn't know them, and or I don't know what. But yeah.
You were fresh fish, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, after when I found out about the diversity program and I started taking classes there, that was a whole different. They definitely have like a much more rapid growing, I think, like not in a bad way. It's just, you know, it's specific to improv.
Sure. So, are you long form at Philly Improv?
Yeah. Yep. Cool. In the same building, they actually have a comedy sports thing.
Oh, cool.
So they do have short form there, but they don't run, like, a lot of them know each other and may have been shows with each other and all that stuff, but it's not the same company.
Yeah, but, well, comedy sports, the smartest thing about comedy sports that the people who invented that did was the idea of owning the name and franchising it out. I was like, hell yeah. That's the smartest business thing I've ever thought of when it comes to improv. I was like, heck yeah, that person does nothing and gets money. They bought a name, and they were like, you want this name? Cool. I think it's so fascinating. Pretty much improv in Austin started comedy sports, but it phased out of that company, like the company that had purchased the franchise. And then there is a theater in town in Austin called The Hideout, which I believe had a different name when it first started. I believe it was like Austin Improv Collective or something like that, because it was the only theater, and it was did short form and long form, and then they just honed it to, now that there's specific owners, they honed it to like a specific like theory of improv, and now they do that kind of stuff. They do more narrative things. But yeah, I mean, Comedy Sports kicked it off here. They were doing improv, and then Comedy Sports was doing it, and then it just, you know, short form just didn't fly here for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting how that is, because I teach improv, right? So one thing that's occurred to me that I have to, like, tell my students, because I think it's important for them to acknowledge the experience of the audience, yeah. which is to say that in a standard improv show that doesn't have like a framework, like, you know, the Armando form where somebody tells a story mm-hmm. and then people do improv based on the story, the audience yeah. can connect to the scenes in a deeper way because they know what the story is that you're building yeah. the stuff off of. But like straight flat, we're just starting this improv where it's like, mm-hmm. hi, we're a troupe. We're going to do improv now. And then a show starts like, it's more, I tell my students, it's more fun for the performers than it is for the audience. Yeah. And they're like, really? And I said, yeah, so you have to let them in on your experience of it. I said, so yeah. your part, the show for them is not just what's the scene about and how's it working. That's what your experience is. What yeah. their experience is look at those six people figuring shit out in front of me. And they yeah. watch the people on stage and they watch the people off stage and they see how you look at each other and they see who's paying attention and they mm-hmm. see who's smiling and having a good time and who's like, you know, got like a little like angry face in the corner because yeah. they don't know what to do. Like they're watching you do the thing. So the yep. the show is not just whatever scene you present to them. The show is, look at these five performers figure stuff out, and the experience of that is it. So I was like, so you have to be open about sharing yeah. that with them. If you're yep. confused, if something's going on, show it, because they want to be part of that experience. And the magic is you. You have to show them when you experience the magic, because they don't have the discovery. They don't have the joy of like realizing what the funniest thing to say is and then saying it and getting mm-hmm. a laugh. They just yeah. are witnesses to this experience. And that makes it a little bit harder to sell. And then also to like explain. Usually when I have my level one recitals, I'll go, don't worry, everybody in the audience is either your friends or other improvisers. They're fine. Like, they know what you're yeah. doing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I had so many issues with being so concerned about thinking the whole time that I thought I had a hearing problem. I literally thought I had a hearing problem, and I went and I got my hearing checked, and the guy was like, you have great hearing. And I was like, what? Oh my God, that's how bad of a listener I am. That I literally thought I couldn't hear like correctly because I was missing so many things. Like, I wouldn't know people's names. I wouldn't know like who they were like in relationship to me. I remember doing entire scenes with like someone who was supposed to be my mother, and I had no idea the whole time.
Oh, sure.
Like, how do you, what? So, like, think people laughed. Like, that's the kind of situation where, like, people are laughing. I think they're laughing at something else, but it turns out they're laughing at me not knowing what I'm doing. Or, like, doing something when it's supposed to be something else or whatever. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. The mishaps, I think, are kind of, are sort of akin to, like, clowning. Like, because yeah. clowning is, look at the buffoonery that is me, and right. when you're not sure what's going on, you're sort of inadvertently being the buffoon in the scenario. But mm-hmm. as long as we're cool with the people that are in our troupe with each other, then it's like, yeah, I'll be the buffoon. Sure. No problem. Exactly. I'm comfortable with you. You're not going to yeah. hurt me or do anything crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I yeah. think my issue of being able to be comfortable in the space and like trusting people, it was affecting how I like listened, you know, mm-hmm. because I was so like caught up in the moment and trying to figure things out for myself, like protecting myself mm-hmm. and not like giving it up to like, as soon as I let go, like it was just like, oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't, the stupider I think something is that I do, the more that people support it in a way that it's just like, okay, I guess that happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually one of my favorite things, and something that, like, I had one of the other teachers really blow my mind about it, because I'd been teaching for years and I was doing this intensive, and in the intensive we had different teachers come in, one in the morning session, one in the afternoon session, and then I was like an overall teacher where I was there all 5 days with them, and I would essentially help them soak up all the information that they were given from the teachers, because I'm watching it in the audience and they're experiencing it. So they're doing like what you said, where like they're in the midst of it. They've lost 40% of the detail just because they're in it. Whereas I'm on the outside taking notes. And then during lunch, after we have that session, we'll sit and talk and I'll be like, what would it be? Wasn't it interesting when he said this? And then those people that heard it will react. And then those who didn't will go, oh, really? I totally missed that. But he mentioned this one thing, which was, you know, we're trying really hard to learn how to, you know, come up with the funniest thing, and we're working on our abilities to hone jokes and to more quickly come up with stuff. He's like, but in reality, whatever happens, happens. And you and the beauty and also the key to keeping the flow of improv is just going with that. So it doesn't matter if you think you came up with the best joke in the whole wide world. If all of a sudden somebody jumps in and makes you all whales in a pool, that's what it is. And you can't try to bring back your other joke or like, no, but wait, this thing is actually what it is. No, because you end up looking like the asshole. And also, not only do you look bad when you do that, but you're, like, robbing yourself the joy of, like, living in the moment with everyone, where you're like, 3 seconds ago we were lawyers, and now we're whales. Like, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. There's no one that's like, oh, listen, that wasn't artistic enough or funny enough. It's like, no, that happened. Just do it. Just do it.
Yeah.
And it blew my mind. Like, I was just like, yeah, you're right. Like, it is. I've been teaching for years, and just this, like, that freeing idea of allowing it was like, oh, wow, it just, whatever happens. And it's such a, you'd think that would be the first thing you think of, but, you know, everybody approaches it in a different way.
Absolutely.
Crazy. So are you, do you have, like, troops that you perform with on the regs now?
Yes. At Philly Improv Theater, I perform with Mirth and Laughter. It's a Shakespeare, it's improv in the style of Shakespeare.
Ooh.
Yep.
Look at you. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's very fun.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast.